Hello, Reuven Flamer. It's great to have you on the podcast today. We got connected through a mutual friend and your co-host of the Street for Bringing. And I also you when we connected, you told me that you are the founder of Natural Food Certifiers, the first kosher organic non-GMO certification agency. And that is definitely in my passion and line of work. So I'm happy to have connected and to talk all about you and health and how we can improve nutrition in our community.
Great. It's great to be here. And that's one of my meta goals is improve the health and nutrition of our community.
Yes. Okay, I'd love to start out to hear a little bit about your background and how you read that you went on Shlichus, you had a Chabad shul. And you a little bit about your background.
Okay, I was born in Montreal, in Quebec, Canada. I was not in a religious family at all. The most Jewish thing we did besides a bar mitzvah was to put a little mobile of a Hanukkah menorah in the window. So that was the extent of my Yiddishkeit life. And when I was very involved in B'nai B'rith as a kid. So I was culturally, I guess you could say, culturally Jewish. I was president of B'nai B'rith of the Eastern Seaboard in Canada, and then of the Northeastern Division on a district level. And I could have run the president, but I decided not to, of the whole international Chabad, sorry, B'nai B'rith, because I decided I was going to go to a non conventional college. And I didn't want to have anything to do with a standardized Jewish community. And that non-conventional college led me, after 2 years, to moving up to the mountains outside Montreal, about an hour north, and opened up a natural food co-op in 1976.
Wow.
Long time ago, that's dating me. And at that time, there was very little. Organic was a word that was just starting to be spoken about. Never mind, it was in the community. But we had a natural food co-op, and we were way above the curve, so that didn't last. And when I was approximately 18 and a half, I hitchhiked from Montreal to Vancouver, British Columbia. And while I was in Vancouver, British Columbia, I had a choice. I either was going to go south to Tennessee to a place called The Farm, which was, that's a whole other story, or I was going to go to India. Those were my choices, Japan and then India. But lo and behold, I met a good friend, perhaps of yours, I'm not sure, but I met what ended up to be a very close friend of mine named Baruch Kaplan, who now teaches at Mayanot. And instead of joining an ashram in India or some kind of whatever you would call it in, I don't even know what you would call it in Japan, or becoming part of the farm in Tennessee, I went to Yeshiva, went to Morristown.
Wow, you got caught just before.
Oh, yeah. I call it the tractor beam, the Rebbe's tractor beam, if you know what that refers to. I don't have to go into it. Rebbe's tractor beam pulled a little shift into that. So I ended up in Morristown. I spent 3 years there. I spent a little bit of time in Los Angeles, spent time in Seattle, Washington, in Yeshiva there. And then I went to Chava Beit Torah for a year or so. And then I went on Shlichus in Palo Alto, California. That ended up coming to a close for whatever reason. And similar thing, not for the same reasons, happened in White Plains, New York, where I moved from Los Angeles to White Plains, and ended up in Muncie because my kids, when I left White Plains, when my kids were going to yeshiva, that's where they were going to. So we moved there. And I had no parnassa whatsoever. So if somebody wants to complain about not having money, I've been there. And I was offered a job to be a mashgiach for Rosh Hashanah for 2 days. Turns out it was the Kabbalah Center. That's a whole other discussion. And that led me down the garden path, and I don't mean that positively, even though everything's a struggle practice, of being a full-time mashgiach for many, many years in a very high-end cable. And I would sit in this hotel, very fancy hotel usually, with very upscale clientele, with exotic hors d'oeuvres, and people were paying money for that exotic hors d'oeuvres specifically, you know how it goes, and lawyers and doctors and hedge fund owners and arbitrage people. This is the people that they were servicing in the greater New York area, but the with all of the hors d'oeuvres and everything else, the most hands, the most frequent reach of a hand to an hors d'oeuvre plate was for hot dogs and a blanket. And I was watching all this going on. I'm saying, what in the world am I doing being mashgiach over people eating themselves to death for? And I ended up opening up slowly but surely natural food certifiers with the Apple K emblem. We were the first only natural food certifier for kosher, and eventually did also the USDA organic. And that morphed into this. We have now 5 certifications. But that's in a snapshot of how I got into this business. I was vegan when I came to Morristown, and I almost died of lack of food. So I, you know, I can relate to that. Fun. Yeah. So I dumped that for a while.
Then I was about to ask that, like, when, because it sounded like your health journey as well as journey within Judaism kind of were close together. But then when you, instead of going to India and you went to yeshiva, did you have to kind of let that stuff go for a little bit?
Well, I had to let go of my diet. I'm coming out soon with a book on meditation, and that's right now being edited. And I write in the beginning of that book that one of the things that confounded me about my experience in yeshiva was every single page that I was learning and reading in Hasidus was the word hisboinenus, meditation. And having come from a background of, we'll call it Indian meditation, expecting that, you know, I'd walk into a room in yeshiva and everybody would be sitting with their tefillin, I don't know, singing a niggun and humming and doing something of meditation. None of that was apparent. I did my own thing.
I thought that was going to happen as well.
Okay, and I thought, you know, and I did the same thing for myself, meaning I decided I'm going to dove in and meditate. And when I was in Morristown, Rabbi Lipsker, Avram Lipsker, who was running yeshiva, he would dove in long, and so would his brother Yosef Yitzchak. So we had a mentor with that, but we were never taught this is how you do it. You kind of have to figure it out on your own. I'm not sure if I figured it out anyways. But when I was in 770, before I got smicha and got married, there was a sefer that came out called Conscious Spilus from the Mittler Rebbe. It was not in print under Kahas. It was printed by I don't know whom, probably a great-great-great-grandson or something of the Mittler Rebbe, and they printed out of Israel a copy of Conscious Spilus and came into 770, and I got a hold of it. And the powers that be in 770 said it was not kosher to learn.
Wow. Even so though it's from the Mittler Rebbe.
Correct. That's how it was a waste of time, except whatever their thinking was. And that's how, or maybe just because it was the ridiculousness of that it wasn't a Kahas label. But they didn't say that. They said, this is not our avodah now. And so, yeah, I had a hard time with that. And I had a hard time with the food. And I had a hard time not doing exercise. But I was a bachur, and I accepted it. And I did what I did. Then I went on shlichus. And I have my thoughts about health, shlichus, meditation, how they all come together. But, you know, don't forget I came from the generation of the what I would call the tail end of the 60s. So
no, but it's nice having this
perhaps.
conversation. I didn't, you know, I get maybe it, we didn't have, I think we must have spoken about it a little bit, but also our connection with practice of meditation, because that's what I felt led me into re-exploring Yiddish guided
Right.
to this. And then the nutrition is also a help, you know, an aid with all that.
Right. You know, as I get older, and if I could be so, what's the word I'm looking for? Have such bravado to say as I get smarter. I think that my experience, at least, is that we have missed the boat on what we actually have. When I say we, I mean the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
I think, and that's where now has been my focus, but I'll give you an example. This Shabbos, I was walking with a person I learned with, not al Chabad, whatever he is, a balabas, and he was walking the opposite direction from shul at Shabbos morning, and I'm going there to learn with him. And he said, oh, I'm a little late. I do my 30-minute walk, and the guy's a little overweight, and he's going to take care of his health. And I said to him, it's really amazing that you're taking care of your health. Not because you're taking care of your health, per se. Not because you're going to live longer or you're going to have more energy. But you realize the relationship between the I and the body. And you're in charge. And there's nothing, there's no greater oinig. Ezuhu gibor, ha-kevesh es-yitzro. And there's no greater oinig than expressing in your life who you are and owning it. So taking care of your body is step number one. If you can't relate to soul, if you can't relate to anything spiritual, so to speak, or as someone told me a couple of weeks ago, I can't relate to Atzilus Bria, Yetzira Nasiya. Well, relate to your body, man. Because your body is a chaza l'kai. That's how you see God, it says. Right? Sorry, achaza l'kai. From my flesh, I see God. Now, we don't have in the Chabad tradition, or in most traditions, Jewishly speaking, of health. And there's a very simple reason, other than the Rambam, by the way. But there's a very simple reason. We had no money, by and large. Think about all the Jewish food that's typical for Ashkenazi. Right, your family comes from Russian stock.
Yeah.
So besides beets, which is a great product, what's the Jewish, Polish, Russian, Hungarian food? Chicken fat. In all ways, shapes, or form, including taking chicken fat and rubbing it on your bread. Did you ever think about why chicken fat? What a weird menu item. Ribbons, it's called, right? When you take it, I think you actually fry it. So what's the reason for it? Because rich people bought the chicken, and poor people got the fat. In Japan, rich people got rice, right? And the poor people got the brown rice. And lo and behold, the rich people got sick. So the poor people were eating this chicken fat and all the other kinds of stuff that they ate, and lots of eggs because it was cheap and so on and so forth. Therefore, besides distribution and other kinds of food issues. So we took that menu and brought it to America, and in the Orthodox world, it has become culturally synonymous with our religious life. Okay, so if you want to embrace poverty, if you want to embrace gullus, keep on eating that food. You want to embrace geula, start eating the way a yid eats.
Yeah.
David HaMelech didn't eat gribbins on bread.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't vegan either, but that's besides the point. Anyways, you heard my, there's nothing more to say. I gave you my whole diatribe now.
Do you are you still practicing vegan eating, or you allow yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm vegan 99.9% of the time.
What, so
I'm not
on Shabbos you'll have?
no, I don't have it on Shabbos. I'm not religiously, what do they like? It doesn't freak me out that animals are slaughtered and eaten or eggs or whatever. So I don't know what I'm going to do Pesach, for example. Pesach, I may have eggs or something.
Well, Pesach
I'm
is
doing
pretty much
this.
the healthiest time of the year, anyways.
Right. So I'm doing. I eat like that all year round, except for the beans part. But I'm basically doing it for energy and strength. Now, that's arguable that better to eat keto or something. There's lots of people who have lots of ideas about. But I know for myself, my weight, my energy is supported by that diet. That's what I do.
Nice. I want to return to it, but first, you caught my interest talking about the meditation a little bit while you were in yeshiva and studying in Crown Heights. How did your practice adapt, and like what did you end up reading the Kuntres Hespilus, and like how
I
did
did.
you
I've been working on
because
country. I've been
one of the
working
I
on
asked
country.
one of the challenges what you know when I went to Yeshiva in Morsan and now here in Crown Heights is adapting the meditation practice to the schedule and also, what the content and
Well, like MacArthur said, MacArthur, I think it is, who said, what was it, Patton, damn the torpedoes. You ever heard that expression?
no.
And I say, damn the schedule. But that's besides the point. How did I adapt? First of all, on Shabbos, I spent as much time as I wanted davening. I learned a lot of Hasidus, there's no question, a lot more than I learned Nigla. But let's talk about now, because I can't say I carried it through all the way. I always was learning Hasidus. To me, I'll say it to you straight out. If I don't learn Hasidus every day, it takes me that much closer to walking out. I don't consider myself frum by rote. So I gotta learn Hasidus. I gotta keep myself, like the coal in the fire in the furnace. And people don't believe me, but it is the I'm not ashamed of it. It's just,
Needs to
Whatever,
be
that's me.
mischadish. Needs to be made new.
What?
It needs to be mischadish.
Yeah. So, exactly. So, where were we? So now I discover when I was in yeshiva, I hardly ever learned a maamar from the Rebbe. I
Same.
couldn't grasp it.
Oh.
I couldn't get it. Didn't relate. I mean, there were a couple ones that were like famous, so I learned them. But by and large, Sichas got me, but not Mamon. And I have a theory, that's my theory. I can't tell you. You got to go ask, the wizards that know these things, because I don't. But I have a theory about the Rebbe's Maamar, because I've come to completely live with them. That there's a difference with the Rebbe's Chassidus than all the other Rebbeim. I'm not talking about Sichas now. I'm talking about Maamar. And what's the difference? People are going to see some obvious differences, but I'll tell you what I think are the differences. If you look at a Maamar, and I actually heard somebody who was a student of Shlomo Chaim Kesselman, who was a Mashpia in Israel, and he was a top Bach in the times of the Rebbe Rashab, and he kind of said the same thing about Chassidus. He didn't say about specifically about the Rebbe's Maamar. And that, what's the, you learn the Maamar so you know the sequence. So I know the Maamar, like I work on one Maamar all the time, so and that's the Maamar I follow. So I know the pieces as they fall into place, paragraph one, paragraph two, et cetera, et cetera. Then you ask yourself, how does the movement of the mimer, it changes, right? But the Rebbe says one point, and then all of a sudden he brings in a different point, or a point from a different source.
Yeah.
What made the change? The Rebbe doesn't tell you. There's a missing piece. It's almost like, you know, in a cell, since you're into health, in a cell, there's all this stuff going on, but nobody knows, scientists don't know why it all goes on. There's like this mysterious thing holding everything together, right? So there's this mysterious, in the backdrop, idea behind a change in a sequence in a mimer. So you ask yourself that. The Rebbe's mimer is built that way. But more than that, and I challenge you to look at this because you can tell me I'm nuts. The other rebellion on an idea of Chassidus, an explanation of dissertation. In my experience, the Rebbe's mimer is the Rebbe's thinking process of all the other rebellions, Chassidus. So his mimer is a meditation on all the other ones. You want to learn to meditate? Learn the Rebbe's mimer. Work on it. Connect it, and in terms of yourself, connect it to what you know about health, what you know, if the Rebbe speaks about the body, what you know about the body. Mm-hmm. Bring in what you know. Bring in everything else. Put it all together in a matrix. Now you're starting to be mistakel in his brain of this. That's my experience.
Very nice. So do you have a formal practice in the morning where you'll meditate before learning Chassidus?
Yeah, when I sit down, put towels on tefillin, I'll think about that mimer. Has nothing to do
something
with
something like Chassidus. In the silent, like a silent practice, or you know, something to go deep. Like I've also practiced that. Let's say once you have your towels or tefillin on and meditating on the Chassidus you learn, but I'm also referring to before you even learned Chassidus in a quiet, because
oh, you mean do I meditate like in a conventional meditation way? Yes, I do, but I wouldn't call it in the same arena.
Well, like that's bonus, also because that's often translated more as contemplation.
Right, Jewish meditation. We only use that word, is about something. All the other meditations are divesting of what you think of.
But right? We also have that in the practice, in Jewish practice, like it says in the Gemara about they would divest the physicality. You know, in the Gemara Brachas, where it talks about that
that's the Navi.
No, not well, that as well, but also in Gemara and in Brachas, like in the page 30, talks about that you don't when you don't rise to daven with covered rush, but except
for covered rush.
And it says in there talking about the Hasidim of old, those time they would meditate for hours, sha'achas, and they divest themselves of physicality, kind of get beyond all of the thoughts of future.
Yeah, but you're assuming schools of thought. There is different schools of thought within Kabbalistic and meditative practices in Torah. I don't do that because I'm not familiar with those kinds of things in terms of Torah. I'm not familiar with Chabad. I don't go out into the field and scream and yell and do his business like Breslov does. It's just not my way of doing things. But so the answer is, in general, no, I don't. But I am doing. I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to get into a controversy. But I do. I'll give you an example. I spent a lot of I went to about five events of Tony Robbins. You know Tony Robbins?
Yeah.
Okay. And I did his. He has a thing called UPW, and I walked across hot coals, right, barefoot. It's As a matter of fact, I crossed the hot coals with another Lubavitcher who I met then. Okay. Now, what did that teach me? How did I get to that point? He spends from about 12 o'clock in the afternoon till 11 o'clock at night with a 1 hour break to get you to the point where you can walk across those hot coals. And the entire process is Moyach Shalit Alalev. Now, he has certain tools.
It means the mind rules the body for those who.
Yeah. Okay. So he has certain tools. Well, I just did a podcast in Street for Bregan last week with my, you know, the one which my chaver who introduced us, Zacharia. And the title of the Street for Bregan that episode was, we have to go from what to how. Mm-hmm. Right? So the Gemara says, if you think the world has Torah, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. But if you think that they don't have wisdom, you're also wrong.
Yeah.
Right? So guys like Tony Robbins have tools. People don't know this. I'm not going to say who it is just in case they want to pretend. I don't even think it's private. One of the biggest fundraisers in Lubavitch in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s, right up to the 80s, on his desk was Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence
People.
On
whose desk?
The fundraiser.
No, who? The fundraiser for what? For Chabad?
Yeah, for Lubavitch, yeah. I told you, you'd freak out who it is. So what I'm saying is that I'm not telling everybody to go buy Dale Carnegie's book. What I'm saying is that there's tools. You have to look, and I started to find that we don't look at what we're being taught. Not only that we're not being taught, we are being taught information, but we're not being taught that information as a tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me give you an example.
But also some tools don't necessarily work for a Jewish soul.
Give me an example of what we're talking about.
Well, certain types of, let's say, meditation or the...
No, I'm not talking about that. Sensitive... I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what you learn in Hasidus. You don't see it as a tool.
Uh-huh.
I'll give you an example of what I mean. We said Moyach Shalat HaLev, the mind rules over their heart. How do most people understand that to me? Do you think? What is the heart referred to? What is the mind referred to?
What most people think you're saying?
Yeah.
The heart refers to your inclination towards the Yetzirah or the Nefesh HaBehemis.
Right.
Your inclination towards doing things that the body
that are prohibited.
Wants. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And the mind refers to the Nefesh Elokis, your intellect and your godly soul.
Okay. Now what?
Let's
talk about what do I do with those emotions of the heart?
When we left off, we were saying how, and since we were, what you learned when you crossed the burning coals at the Tony Robbins retreat, that Moyach Shalat Alalev, that all that, which is one of the, you could say in four words, the whole Tanya, the work by the Alter Rebbe, is about how the mind governs the body. And you asked me, what exactly, how do people really understand that at first? And then you were about to explain what it really implies to or means.
Right. So I'm going to ask you now, why do I say walking over hot coals is Moyach Shalat HaLev?
Because when somebody sees the hot, fiery coals, their initial reaction is probably fear and that my feet are going to burn and there's no way that I can cross it. But by you using your mind and governing the body, the heart, in this case, the body, you're proving to yourself that actually I'm, you know, much stronger than that. I don't have to allow that back to me.
Okay. Well, he spent We spent 10 hours getting to the point where we can do this.
Well, it's making it because you have to come to believe it.
Right. So you could, it's more than that. You've got to also intrinsically believe that reality is in your maya.
Yeah.
So it's not per se that when I walked across those coals, it was not long, it was 10 feet. But when I got on the other side, I was flabbergasted, A, that I did it, and B, that it didn't hurt. And how come I did it? So what I want to say about that is like this. If you look at the way the Rebbe Rashab and others in Chassidus says, Mayer Shalta Alev, is like this. Change your belief and perceptions. You're going to change what you want. It's not throw your midos under the bus. It's not what a lot of people struggle with. In other words, let's talk about in Chabad culture. I want to be rich and I want to be famous and I want to own a lot of money and blah, 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 blah. And he's sitting in yeshiva and he's being told about how bad all these pursuits are. Not Hasidish. On one hand, true. Depending why you're doing it, and etc. What is your perception of the money? What is your perception of why you want the money? What is the motivation behind it? Where are you sitting with them? What if someone says, I want to make a lot of money in the next 6 months because I want to take on the expenses of 2 battalions in the IDF? Does that change the equation for you?
Yeah.
Or this, yeah, okay. So it's Moyach enlightens you to want in a different way. That's a lot different statement than throw your emotions under the bus. Okay. Yeah, I'm a behema and let's go back to health. I love chocolate cake and I love chocolate cookies and I love eating chulent. In Muncie, I go to shul with people who are foodies. Thursday night, they're scarfing down their chulent like there's no tomorrow. Friday afternoon, they're having l'chaims, which a lot of Chabadniks have, their Friday afternoon twilight, you know, whiskey club. And then Friday night, you know, and on and on and on. And we say, hey, buddy, do you realize X, Y, and Z? Okay. Could you change how you look at food? The more you learn about food, the more you learn about neshama and guf, not fear. Not that you're going to, God forbid, drop dead, because we know that you can show all the movies you want of people who have terrible diseases from smoking. It doesn't stop people who are smoking. It doesn't say it's not going to happen to me. What happens if I show you how you're going to feel if you stop eating cake? Oh, I love that feeling of having more energy instead of the dip that I never realized that I was having every time I had a sugar rush because I wasn't paying attention to it. Well, now my mind changes how I look at food, energy, the whole picture, etc. That's Moyach Shaldaleh. Up your game. Look at the world differently. Now, there's another component to it, which is one of my also things that bothers me, and that is, you're looking at the world in a different way in Chassidus, not to prove to yourself that Chassidus is better, not to prove to yourself that Yiddishkeit is true, not to prove to yourself that I can makar of somebody. I call it, you know, God doesn't need your defense. So he doesn't need a defensive attorney. Not because of propaganda. In other words, going back to what I said before, Moyach Shalat al Alev, there's Machshava deeper in Maisa, right? And I gave you the example. These are levushim. These are garments of the soul. So, okay, fine. So what do most people hear? Don't think about the pink elephant that you're thinking of. Pink elephant. So that's machshava. But I could control it because I can be a beinoni. Okay, these are all true statements in and of themselves, but they're very weak. They're very vapid. Mm-hmm. What happens if I say to you, let's go back to the guy I said we met on Shabbos. You know what? I think it's amazing that you love yourself so much that you're willing to walk 30 minutes a day because it says that you know who controls everything. The I. There's a me. And I'm in charge of my goof. And I'm in charge of my mouth. Not because of it's usher to speak Lashon Hara, per se, even though that's true, obviously. But because when I operate from myself, that's the most pleasurable experience. Say it that way. Just in the very fact that you're manipulating your thoughts gives you the ability to feel who you really are. I'm the guy who controls my thoughts. I'm no more my thoughts anymore. You know, it's interesting. The Rebbe Rashab says in Kunjus Tefillah, how do you get to think about a mimer for any length of time? This idea of inability to think, we think that it's like we have innovated the idea of ADHD. Mittler Rebbe speaks about it. The Rebbe Rashab speaks about it. It's probably been a problem all the way back to, I don't know, as long as there was the people on earth. But obviously there's more distractions today. And he says, how do you do it? You should think about Chassidus a few times during the day. Why? Because it gets you, it builds up the muscle just like going to the gym. Okay, interesting. Excellent. Now, what if I tell a 16-year-old bacher that the same way that he wants to feel himself as a metzias, which he does, every 16-year-old wants to feel that they're somebody, right? It's one of the struggles of a teenager. They're starting to come into their own. Some people act out, and then they want to, you know, from a Hasidic point of view, they want to put on a t-shirt, jeans, and go clubbing, if you want to take an extreme example. But today, it's not even extreme. It's extreme, but it's common enough that people know what the word clubbing means. I just learned it last week. But okay, so maybe I don't know exactly what it means, but they're going out, out on the town. Okay, because they want to feel their own self. It's part of it. It's not just taiva. That's their identity. And then when you push back on them, they say, I'm going to do what I want, not what you want, right? Every teenager has that relationship with some authority.
Yes.
Would you agree? Okay. What if we tell him and show him that self-control is the highest pursuit that he'll ever feel of himself?
Mm-hmm.
And you get him to taste it and you put it in that framework, will there be a better chance of him wanting to apply it? Now, the guy who goes to the gym at 16 years old and wants to flex his muscles, you know, and look buff, he already knows that. He knows that he feels himself, he doesn't maybe have the words for it. It's a great feeling. Now, he's doing it over his goof. Okay. I say the same thing when it comes to eating healthy. It's not only health. I'm making a statement about what my metzias is. My metzias is not food. My metzias is that I live in my body, which means it's not the same thing either. There's an I living in my body. I'm feeling it even on a Nefesh of Bahamas level, or what you call it, an animal level, but I'm going to control what I eat.
Mm-hmm.
Intrinsically, that's a lot more exhilarating than the guy who pigs out and eats a whole pint of ice cream. And then says, oh my God, I ate a whole pint of ice cream. Or maybe stop saying that altogether, keeps on doing it. And then we get to that point. Anyways, does that make sense?
Yeah. Beautiful. coming to a close, and God willing, we'll have more conversations and be able to, you know, help each other grow. And anybody who listens to this will also be inspired to learn more about their health and how, and also in growth in Judaism. Could you share a little bit more about natural food certifiers and what's your goal with it? And, because there's a lot of products. I remember one of the difficulties was, there were a lot of I was keeping healthy and had different products before keeping kosher, and then it was a little bit of a challenge when going kosher that some of the products weren't necessarily kosher. Now, thank God, I'm finding different ones that are, but. What do you guys look for, and what do you have? What are the certain products that are under the natural food certification?
Well, for starters, we only certify, again, something that would fit our definition of natural. So there's no colors, there's no artificial colors. I mean, there's colors if it's beet juice, but there's no artificial colors. There's no direct GMOs. Is it kosher to have a GMO? Yes. But we're giving the choice in that. I mean, besides an obvious mission of any business to stay afloat, and that's not probably what you're asking, my hallucination, as some people say, my dream would be to get people to be more conscious of eating healthy. Mm-hmm. Not saying this out of ego.
Yeah.
I'm 66 years old, and I'm more energetic than half the guys in my shul who are 30. Now, I put a lot of effort into it, but there's no reason for 45-year-old guys to have no energy.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for people to be... I mean, where did we see this the strongest is during COVID. I had a whole experience with COVID, and I had COVID. But I was in Los Angeles at a natural food show in 20, it was would have been March 2019, I think it is. When did COVID hit?
Like 2020.
So it was March 2020. The natural food show was supposed to start on Thursday. On Tuesday, 2 days before, I was already in LA for it. They closed it down because of COVID. It was like the beginning. Mm-hmm. And on that Thursday night, instead of going to the trade show, I went home. So I get onto JetBlue, and everybody's spraying, you know, all over the place. Like it was ridiculous to me. And I didn't know what COVID was. I didn't know how bad it was going to be, but I know what a virus is, and I know what it means to have an immune system. Later on, a year and a half later, I put out a meme. Can you imagine that they say that they came out with a study that the natural immune system is stronger than a vaccination? Well, talk about thinking that God is in the world versus the secular-minded person who thinks that it's not, and that the vaccination is stronger than the immune system. Okay, now I know all the whole story about vaccinations. I know what the Rebbe said, and I can argue with you, and I know what the rabbi said, and so on and so forth. But that's not my point. I don't want to go down there. So I come back, and in our shul, which is this kind of off-color group of people, we had a going-away party. It was right after Purim, and the going-away party was Shabbos. There was 150 people, and we said, we're going to have a going-away welcome COVID party because we knew we were going to be getting shut down. And do you know that the only people who got really sick in our 150 people were the people that took the vaccination? Now, we didn't know what was going to fly with this stuff. We had no idea. And it's not because vaccinations are evil. But at the same time, I got COVID. I knew I was going to get COVID. It was a week later. I was on the plane. If it was as real as they were saying, I was going to get it. And I got it for 5 long days. with no symptoms, except for one. I had no coughing symptoms. I had no breathing problems. I had no fever. I had one symptom. I lay in my room, immobile. I had no ratzoin for anything. I'm a mishugana. I have to work with music playing. I'm in the car. I have to have music playing. I go to sleep with music playing. I didn't want to listen to music for 4 days while I had COVID. I just wanted to stare at the ceiling. And on the fourth day, I realized that I am living in a huge 8x8 room that was my coffin, because I wasn't moving. I wasn't doing anything. I hardly was eating. I was just like listless, right? And I said, I better like get a hold of myself. But I had this moment of realization. All I was my mind. The only thing that was moving was inside my head, which I knew I could, like I could move it like that. Mm-hmm. But I followed the Zelenko protocol and so on and so forth. And I did what I knew from all my clients, that what they put out, and I got better. And I didn't have it that bad. So, you know, I just met a doctor this morning, a medical student in my shul, and he said to me that people under the age of 70, most of his patients that he sees, he's right now an intern, a resident, most of the patients that he sees are sick because of lifestyle. There's no reason why you should have a rabbi at the front of a synagogue who looks, feels, and acts like he's sick.
Yep.
And that's what we got to change. It's going to come from the ground up because, again, it's the culture. I mean, there's a whole Hasidic culture of five different kinds of kugels. I think it's on Shavuos, I don't know, on Sukkot, and you have each kind, and it's like it's a religious experience to have your kugels. And they're going to tell you that, I don't care where it comes from, to be honest with you. It could come from this Rebbe and that Rebbe, and I don't know what the Rebbe did in 200 years ago eating. And I don't want to diss somebody's practice, because, you know, get a life. You know, maybe put something healthy in the kugel instead of, you know, I don't want to end on that. I'll get in trouble. But anyway, so yeah, that's what
it's also, you know, those things, it's in moderation as well. Sometimes those things can be had and enjoyed.
Yeah.
It's because the food itself can also be a mitzrayim.
Correct. When I was in college age, a big thing was macrobiotics. And I saw right away that I rarely saw a healthy looking macrobiotic. Just like I'll tell you that a lot of times I'll see militant vegans who look unhealthy. Why? Because they're emotionally and mentally constrained by the very food that they're eating. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. Yeah. And I can also have a pint of ice cream and not have a nervous breakdown. You know, it's not like eating trait, you know, so, which we don't want to do, but it's a certain.
It's a certain potential that we have.
Yeah. And it's a certain potential that we have to live by.
I remember it was challenging for me when it's a strong custom, and it said that the Rebbe would always wash and have bread from Olava Malka. And I had a lot of resistance doing the verse because, like, I ate so much bread already for Shabbat. You know, and especially during the summer when Olava Malka is late at night. We're also eating before davening, you know. And so, but, you know, work with it and, you know, a kazayas, a small amount of any type of bread is also okay.
Right.
It's for the, there is something kind of deeper to it that's deeper than just the food that you're eating. At least I found in my experience.
You know, Reb Nachman of Breslov says that the biggest taiva is food. It's the most frequent. And when you, I don't remember the words how he says it, but when you think about it, food is a comfort, we call it a comfort food, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that means your whole being changes, it changes your.
It makes sense.
That's not Moya, that's not Moya Shalalei, baby. That's Goof Al Ha Moya. It is.
But it's part of, what if it's part of the, like the idea of Malava Malka, that after Shabbat ends and before going back into the week, we have a meal.
Fine, if that's why you're eating it, Gesundheit, hey.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't eat Malava Malka, but there is a story with the Baal Shem Tov saying on Shabbos that he saw, I hear that he walked into a place and saw a chassid, an ox wearing a strimal with its horns sticking through the strimal. And we understand what he meant.
Yeah.
So Shabbos is also a holy time to eat. Do I sometimes, or often even, eat like an ox? Yes. So that's an avodah.
Yeah.
But like, once again, it's more, it's becoming the master of your own self.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, and I'll give you an example. I just had, when, the shul I go to is like a Karlebach-oriented shul. Shlomo Karlebach, a lot of music, a lot of dancing, there's a lot of fun, and so forth. So I explain to people, what's the difference between Shlomo Karlebach, contemporary Jewish music, and a Chabad Niggun? And unless you make complex the Chabad Niggun, meaning you add in drums and trumpets and you scream about, you know, you make it kind of like modern, it's not entertaining like a Shlomo Karlebach song. You can get off on Shlomo Karlebach. But this is my thought, and that is Jewish music today is entertaining, meaning the outside entertains you, changes who you are on the inside. A Chabad Niggun was, I was thinking about God, and I reached the point where I realized emotionally that I don't have him. So I sang a Niggun of Gaguyim. A Niggun sprouts out from me that expresses the gap between what I know and what I have. Mm. So the Niggun comes out of something that you generated, not that the Niggun generates you. Same thing with food. Could I look at food as I'm in control of me?
I'm and healthy, I'm feeling this, and that's that. Then the expression is the Niggun, or I'm feeling right. This, and therefore I'm eating the food that matches my energetic vibration.
They say, it's interesting, they say, and the Rebbe says this, the Friedrich Rebbe says this about his own self when he was told not to stomach habits. And he writes about how do you create a good habit or break a bad habit. So he gives the example, let's say, of a person who wants to stop, go on a diet. What do most people say? I'm on a diet.
Mm-hmm.
He says, no. The data is better that you should say, I am a healthy eater.
Yeah.
Use the identity. So what is that really saying? It's not fooling yourself. What's your identity?
Yeah.
And to say I'm a Chabad Chassid who's from is not answering that question when it comes to food and smoking and whatever else that we do.
Even to that, you're sure saying the Jew is more the deeper identity.
Yeah. Should be, anyway. And listen, we all fail. We all have animal issues, and we all have challenges. But I'm just saying in the concept.
Yeah. Anyhow, Reuven, it's been a pleasure first of all, speaking with you again. It's been some time. Thank you for taking time out of your day and for coming on the podcast. And I will say also for myself, returning to this, it's been a nice breath of fresh air. Being able to get behind the mic and record a new podcast about, you know, bringing all the stuff that I'm passionate and love together. And God willing, we'll should have wonderful and positive influence. But where can people hear more about you and get natural food certifiers, as well as your Fabringen, the Street Fabringen podcast? How can people listen?
Well, natural food certifiers, you can go to our website is NFC, Natural Food Certifiers, nfccertification.com, or you can email me at Ruvain, R-U-V-E-N, at nfccertification.com. I also have an easier one, which I'll respond to for whatever your reason you're emailing, and that's kabudlife, L-I-F-E, at Gmail. And our Fabringen, which I think is a little bit of fun, is called streetfabringen.net. We're on Street Fabringen is also on Spotify. And it's a weekly Fabringen between myself and Zacharia Lipitz. And we tackle issues that are on our mind, just like we just did. What we just had is a Street Fabringen.
Beautiful. Awesome.
So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure.